Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, the Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit my webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on the International Forecaster right after this. You know, Americans today are interrogated, watched, measured, and counted more than at any time in our history. Surveillance and electronic record keeping of nearly every routine activity, from bank deposits to medical visits, has produced greater efficiency and security, all right, but it's also responsible for a very discernible erosion of our ability to live our lives free from outside scrutiny. Now, the federal government currently maintains an average of 15 files on every American, and that according to estimates by the Office of Management and Budget. And closer to home, state and local governments use computers to keep their own files on us. For instance, a study conducted by the New York Committee on Open Government found that that state, New York, and its agencies operated 1,776 separate data systems containing 10,799 categories of information about New York residents, and every one of those systems contained between 2 and 10 million records. 2 and 10 million. Now, information about you is gained from 63 sources, and this information is gathered and stored in a very reasoned and logical manner for later retrieval and use. Now, would you like to know how government, banking, insurance, business, and industry obtains all of this information about you? What are their sources? How is it stored? How is it retrieved? What do they want it for anyway? Well, knowing how information is gathered and what information is stored and what information you want to keep personal and private actually puts you in the driver's seat in your quest for privacy. Did you know that? If you'd like more information about privacy and privacy issues, it's part of my business school. You can just call the school, the law school at 417-273-4967 and ask for the free general law CD package first. Let's start there. It's free. Doesn't cost anything to get some general information. Now, let me tell you how to train yourself to be just as personal and private as you want to be. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge. Again, just call the law school, the number 417-273-4967. If you're online, you can just go to the website georgegordon.org, click onto the email machine, and send an email request. Now remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967 for that free general law CD package. All right, I said last night we'd get into the International Forecaster, and I got off on PETA, and it took the whole program. Bob Chapman puts out the International Forecaster. I want to tell you a little something about Chapman. It's my understanding, I've met the guy. I mean, I'm not his close personal buddy, but I was talking to Frank the Gold Broker, and he said he was a former member of the CIA. He acts like he knows what he's talking about. He's been publishing the International Forecaster for 46 years. Now, the International Forecaster is a newsletter. It comes out weekly. Every Saturday, I take this off of the website, and it averages about 30 to 40 pages. This week's was 43 pages. This one I'm looking at right here, the one with the General Motors story in it, it's probably about 35 pages. Let me just look over here and see. 32 pages. $129 a year. $129. If you divide this out, just to give you an illustration, let's put $130 into the machine here. Divide that by 52, that's $2.50 a week. That's less than a newspaper. And it's got 32 pages, so we'll divide that 250 divided by 32, and I think it's 8 cents a page. And every page is jam-packed with information. I liken it to a newspaper published like Reader's Digest, with the essential bits and pieces of the news without all of the paragraphs and paragraphs of hyperbole that goes with the newspaper article, which they just print to take up space and waste your time. So let me give you a review of the International Forecaster, and you can decide for yourself whether you want to subscribe to it. I recommend the International Forecaster, the Privateer, and Franklin Sanders Money Changer. And those are three. Kitco, just jot this one down, KITCO.com. Kitco has a number of good newsletter writers on there that'll give you some market analysis and inflation information and housing bubble stories free of charge. Some of this information comes over the internet, some from the news wires, some of it comes from publications like the Forecaster. You might write this down, Bob Chapman, Post Office Box 510-518, Punta Gorda, Florida, 33951, 0518. You got to have that last four numbers on there, 0518. 33951-0518 is the zip code. It's called the International Forecaster. This is the May 2005, number 3, volume 9, number 5-3. An international financial, economic, political, and social commentary published and edited by Bob Chapman. I got an email address on here, too. It's called the International Forecaster. International Forecaster at yahoo.com. And the webpage is the internationalforecaster.com. If you can spell International Forecaster, you got it. It's the internationalforecaster.com webpage. Here's the General Motors story. This is a shocker. What if we told you that General Motors' demise was planned years ago? Would you believe us? Well, General Motors sold 30,000 plus cars in China in the first quarter. Since 2001, General Motors has spent $3.5 billion to build manufacturing plants in China. General Motors last year bought $6 billion in Chinese auto parts and at the same time laid off 37,500 American workers. In 1985, General Motors started building transmissions in China. In 1990, it began to establish a light truck plant in Shenyang, and it began building a $1 billion factory to produce 100,000 Buick sedans a year. In 1992, General Motors shut down its Buick plant in Flint, Michigan. This past April, General Motors announced plans to build a $400 million engine and power drive plant in Russia, as it announced layoffs at its United States plants. General Motors has a deal to build Russian-engineered cars to sell for $5,000. That deal is 40% underwritten by the European Bank for Reconstruction, which gets 10% of its funding from the U.S. government, which is you and me. And they sell the Neva sports utility vehicle that sells for $8,000 in Russia and for $11,000 in Europe and Mexico under the Chevrolet brand. And in the late 1980s, General Motors built a $150 million Hungarian auto factory. And in the early 1990s, they built a plant in the Czech Republic. Now, General Motors has a long record of offshoring and outsourcing, making it even more insulting to American auto workers. One of the chief conduits of this corrupt corporate welfare is the Export-Import Bank, which provides $15.5 billion in taxpayer-subsidized loans or loan guarantees annually. Since 1985, Communist China has become the largest Asian beneficiary of the Export-Import Bank loans and guarantees. This is not only General Motors moving its business offshore to China, but we taxpayers are helping to finance the loss of our own jobs. And since 2000, General Motors has received more than $500 million in direct loans and loan guarantees from the Export-Import Bank. The result has been General Motors has reduced its workforce from 559,000 to 314,000, and General Motors has just announced that it will close three major auto manufacturing plants in the United States. Now, the 1994 passage of the NAFTA bill was a boon to General Motors and other manufacturers. We predicted then a massive loss of U.S. manufacturing jobs, but we were only one. We were one of only a very few lone voices in the wilderness. In 1999, Mexico was running an $11.9 billion trade surplus in automobiles and auto parts, supplying the United States with 560,000 cars while importing only 46,000. It won't be long until we won't export Mexico any cars as cheap. Russian imports flood the Mexican market thanks to General Motors. Now, I got to pause here for a moment and make a comment over here. This is George, little Georgie speaking rather than Bob Chapman. I read that story and I was shocked, and then I got to thinking about it and I said, oh, it makes all the sense in the world. General Motors is a multinational corporation which is losing money in the United States in its manufacturing plants because they've got to pay around $30, $40, $50, $60 an hour to auto workers here in the United States under a union contract. Here's another shocker. $1,600 of the price of every car that General Motors builds goes to its pension program. Now, with the introduction of free trade under the New Deal, Fair Deal administrations back in the 1930s, this concept of free trade is actually a one-way street. That is, the French can import their wine into the United States that they make over there for, let's say, $3 or $4 an hour labor, and over here in the United States, we've got $5 an hour labor, so they can sell their wine cheaper than we can produce it here. Tomatoes are that way, shoes are that way, steel and textiles are that way. Our founding fathers financed our federal government with import and export taxes. You Frenchmen want to bring your wine into the United States, that's fine. So we're going to tax it until it has to sell for the same price as American wine. You want to bring your Russian cars and sell them in the United States? That's fine. We don't have a bitch with that. But we sell our SUVs for $20,000 and you sell yours for $8,000. So we're going to put a $12,000 tax on your SUV. Bring all you want over here. Meanwhile, we'll finance our federal government off of the $12,000 that somebody paid in tax to buy that Russian import. And those are the people that financed our government. Today, we Americans are financing our own destruction through free trade, and I just thought I'd share this article with you from General Motors. Now, General Motors isn't entirely to fault. They're a part and parcel with the free trade advocacy groups, and that's fine. But after all, it's we Americans that are buying these General Motors cars. And you know, when you hear a story like this, that ought to tell you a little something. I wouldn't buy a General Motors car. I wouldn't buy a Ford either. I mean, if I'm going to buy a foreign import, I might as well buy a Japanese car. Because that Chevrolet was made in Mexico with cheap slave labor, and the parts came from China to Mexico to make the car to sell to you and me here in the United States. Now, General Motors isn't doing you and I a favor. Now, what you're witnessing here is the demise of General Motors. They're going to bankrupt General Motors here in the United States, and they'll continue making their automobiles under some other brand name in every foreign country in the world. That's what multinational is all about. They'll bankrupt here so they don't have to pay those pensions, $1,600 a car. And then they can more effectively compete with China and Russia and Mexico and everybody else. That's what free trade does. Tuck that one away in your heart. Free trade ought to be abolished. I mean, that's just in the American interest. But then if you're in the interest, or you're thinking about the interests of China, then free trade's a great program. Well, free trade and globalization, this is Bob Chapman again, free trade and globalization is the tactic being used to implement world government, part of the groundwork of which was laid in 1965 in the Canada-U.S. Auto Agreement. This was a precursor to NAFTA. Next are CAFTA, that's the Central America Free Trade Association, and the FTAA. Free Trade Association of the Americas, designed to bring about economic and political merging. This is a part of the program for the One World, New World Order. General Motors is the largest private employer in the world and has been a symbol of American prosperity and personal and social mobility. We expect, as was done in 1979 with Chrysler, as GM's situation gets worse, there will be a call for a similar bailout at taxpayer expense. Now, this is an example of planned destruction and then resurrection. Planned destruction and resurrection. To advance the free trade agenda and globalization and to further destroy the American economy. Now, free trade is the furtherance of elitist international cartels. It embraces many forms of government and government intervention that makes free trade not free, but robber-baron globalization. Now, back in our colonial period, we called this the British East India Tea Company. That was a cartel. And our founding fathers rebelled against that. In the process, government finances corporate welfare for the elitist insiders. The Fortune 500 and other major corporations are the major beneficiaries. Almost all of these corporations are being partially financed by the Export-Import Bank, the European Bank for Reconstruction, the International Monetary Fund, and the World Bank. It's a gravy train for rich corporations. Large orders for U.S. goods are expedited often by retiring debt of the buying country owed to the United States. The Export-Import Bank has $260 billion at its disposal currently to subsidize the business and major transnational corporations like General Motors. When deals do not work, we get to pay for them. Not only does our government subsidize and bail out these elitist corporations, but it also bails out countries that are customers. In recent years, our government has bailed out Mexico, part of Asia, Japan, and long-term capital management, called LTCM. And there's no reason for these bailouts. They are pure corporatist fascism and not the providence of our government. These bailouts are part of America's imperial reach, supposedly, for our economic well-being and our national safety. They are the reflection that laissez-faire capitalism does not work, and that simply is not so. It does work. Today's free trade doesn't apply under the heading because the end product is destined to be the deliberate destruction of the U.S. economy and the merger of America into this fascist New World economy, this New World Order. Anyone who cannot see that is just plain dumb. Markets are no longer allowed to correct because our government wants to manage all of the markets, and they do. And that's government by regulation, or fascism. It is your taxes and the debt that you're responsible for that is bailing out all of these corporate entities. Whether it's Mexico, LTCM, or the investment markets, almost all economic problems stem from government intervention. A good part of that is free trade. Now, another example of which is OPIC. It's the Overseas Private Investment Corporation. OPIC, the Overseas Private Investment Corporation is what it's called. Now, that is an export subsidy program, and it's another form of corporate welfare. The subsidies are given out to U.S. transnational corporations. This is taxpayer money to do business in foreign countries and then undercut U.S. domestic businesses. The OPIC in 32 years has supported $150 billion worth of foreign investments that have helped foreign countries generate 700,000 jobs, most of which were at the expense of American workers. These policies by all of these government agencies are championed by denizens of both political parties, Republicans and Democrats alike, because most of them are controlled by the same elitists behind the scenes. both socialists and fascists, love free trade and globalization. Needless to say, corporate fat cats and self-serving politicians love it just as well. The wealthy get richer, and the poor and the middle class are forced to struggle harder. Internationalism is a state of mind promulgated officially for the elitists by way of the Council on Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission, and the Bilderberger Group. They tell Americans that it is good to be interdependent. It will lead to a better life, when the truth is, in fact, it will lead to economic slavery under either socialism or fascism. Part of this game is the end of sovereignty and the amalgamation of nations into a new world order. Free trade and globalization is the vehicle to take us there. If individuals in other countries disagree with these elitist philosophies and goals, they murder them, and if they cannot do that, then they invade them, kill the population, and occupy their nation. Just take a look at Afghanistan and Iraq. Now, you have recently seen that in Afghanistan and Iraq. Free trade makes America dependent on other nations. It steals our freedom and it steals our independence. And that's why we have free trade agreements and production sharing. We also have it to create monopolies and cartels. We do not like being dependent or interdependent. We do not want NAFTA, the World Trade Organization, the Central America Free Trade Organization, or the Free Trade Organization of America, because all of these institutions subject every American eventually to tyranny, just like the British East India Tea Company did. And at home, our fascist government has Patriot Act 1 and Patriot Act 2, and now there's coming a national ID card. Now, don't you people get it? Americans are being enslaved, slowly but surely. We're being enslaved. And the dollar rally has become explosive. Every central bank is gauging itself so that the derivative bomb is kept from exploding. The speculators and the hedge funds are aboard, and the rally continues. In this process, the firms with major derivative exposure are now under pressure, which tells us that there is a major problem. Under this cover, the falling gold prices, the commodity exchange has dramatically lowered the margin requirement for gold effective Monday, 5/16/05, from $2,250 to $1,350 per contract, as silver holds its own. Now, fear is still present in the market, as you can see from the following yields and the bond rally. Now, the average maturity of current annual debt issuance is 33 months. The average maturity of all outstanding debt is about 4.5 years. And about 60% of the outstanding debt will mature within the next 3 years. Now, that's 60% of $4.5 trillion has to be rolled over into further bond purchases of $2.7 trillion. Now, a trillion is 1,000 billion. That's $2,700 billion, boys and girls. Now, if not, interest rates are going to be going up. Now, that's in addition to a $500 billion annual federal budget deficit that has to be financed by selling these new treasury bonds. Now, that means that on average, each year, $900 billion in securities must be issued by our government, or the bubble breaks and the party ends. Total debt held by foreigners is $1.7 trillion. $2.8 trillion is held by Americans. In the meantime, inflation is 9.5%. I mean, that's the real inflation price. Just take a look at the price of houses, the price of gasoline, the price of things that aren't even in the CPI, the Consumer Price Index. Add them all together. The official Consumer Price Index, inflation rate, 3 to 4%. The real inflation rate, 9.5%. You have to live somewhere. Housing prices are going up, boys and girls. They're being hyperinflated. And it is devouring dollar-based assets. The purchasing power of the dollar is going down at the rate of 12% per year. 1% a month. If you have $1,000 in the bank, you're losing $10 a month in purchasing power. Now, this is the final debasement of the world's reserve fiat currency. Now, that's what's going on. Just thought you'd like to know. Now, that's the state of the dollar. Now, the public still does not have a clue. Let's talk about pensions for a minute. The general public does not have a clue as to what is happening to American pensions. Now, the latest fiasco was United Airlines. United Airlines defaulted on $9.8 billion, which is owed to 134,000 employees and retirees. It's the largest pension disaster in history here in the United States. The largest pension default in history. Worse yet, the rest of the airlines are soon to follow the United Airlines example. Their combined pension debt is $11.4 billion. Those who receive pension benefit guarantee corporation pensions get varying payoffs. At age 65, if you're in a failed plan in 2005, the most you can receive is $45,615 a year. If you're retiring at 55 and your plan failed in 2000, your maximum benefit is $17,397 a year. There are no health benefits. Those have been wiped out. You do not recover severance, vacation pay, or life insurance. Now, this is a bare bones, and that's the way it was set up. The PBGC. You ever heard that, those initials before? The PBGC. Well, it's the Public Benefit Guarantee Corporation, set up by Congress back in about 1972 to take over these failed pension programs. These private pension programs like General Motors and United Airlines. Well, this PBGC already is burdened with 3,496 failed plans just like United Airlines. This is the equivalent, boys and girls, in the pension world that we went through back in the 1990s with the failed savings and loan companies. The taxpayers pick up the tab. Now, the PBGC takes over the UAL pension plan. It's $25 billion in debt. The future sure does not look good, with 362 S&P 500 companies having problems right now. 85% of them are in deficit in the U.S. stock market, or if the U.S. stock market goes to the Dow level of 7268 or lower, you can kiss many pensions goodbye. These unfunded plans are approaching $100 billion, and the Dow at 7268, the unfunded portion would be $200 billion. Now, you can see why there is such an incentive to file for bankruptcy. Because if these companies do not file, their liability grows and they cannot compete in their industry. In that exercise, only the company executives win. Everyone else loses. The pension bomb will be big in the hundreds of billions of dollars. Hundreds of billions of dollars. Now, let's stop here for a moment and analyze this. If United Airlines filed for bankruptcy and jettisoned their pension program, what do you think Delta and American Airlines are going to do? You see, now United Airlines no longer has to pay pension benefits for their employees, but Delta and American and everybody else does. This is going to prompt every one of these American airlines to file for bankruptcy so that they can get rid of their pension plans so that they can more effectively compete with United Airlines. What do you think General Motors is going to do? That $1,600 per car. Already they're talking about taking the most profitable portion of General Motors, it's called the General Motors Acceptance Corporation, and spinning it off, letting their auto manufacturing company go bankrupt. They'll take the profitable portion and move that to China, or move it to Europe or someplace else. Now, isn't that just special? And it's being done at your expense. Well, we got to take a break here. We're at the halfway point. Keep in mind that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. For more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Remember, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it's open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the Law Hour, an editorial review, brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events from the scriptural perspective 7 days a week. The sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour, an editorial review, gives credit to the authors and publications used on this program and often endorses and recommends books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not necessarily mean that the authors or publications so endorsed or recommended will reciprocate. And that's because most of the authors and publications cited on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not necessarily endorsed by the Law Hour or editorial review. And remember that the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers or the sponsors or management or the staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, remember our website, georgegordon.org, or call the law school direct, 417-273-4967. We are reviewing the International Forecaster. I recommend it pretty highly. Bob Chapman's got his head screwed on straight, in my view. You can go to the International Forecaster webpage. It's easy. It's internationalforecaster.com. Be sure to put in the. It's all one word, theinternationalforecaster.com. That'll take you to their webpage if you want to send them an email. It's called internationalforecaster@yahoo.com. internationalforecaster@yahoo.com. If you want to order a subscription, send a $130 bill to the International Forecaster, P.O. Box 510-518, Punta Gorda, Florida, 33951-0518. And they say here in the newsletter you got to include that post office box 0518 with the zip code, or you can't get it delivered because their post office box is 510518. So they got to have that 0518 on the zip code, and if they don't have it, it won't run through their machine and they won't deliver it. How do you like that? So that's the international forecaster, Bob Chapman. If you're going to send him a check, he says make the check out to Bob Chapman. Don't make it out to the international forecaster. Make it out to me, Bob Chapman. It's $129.95 in U.S. funds, and comes out weekly. Comes out right over your internet connection. Comes right over your email. Talk about convenient. And it's about 40 pages. It's probably the biggest and most comprehensive newsletter in the business. If there's anybody else putting out a bigger, better, more informative newsletter than the International Forecaster, I don't know what it is, and I don't know how many we receive here at the Law Hour, but I would imagine it's probably 25 or 30, maybe more. I can't remember them all. But it's by far and away the biggest that we receive here. Bilderbergers. You ever heard of the Bilderberger gang? Well, we've just received the attendance list from the latest Bilderberger meetings in Rottach-Egrim, Germany. That was spelled Rottach-Egern, Rottach-Egrim, Germany, on May 5th through the 8th, 2005. And we also received a number of pictures of attendees and also pictures of CIA and U.S. Special Forces personnel. All at our expense, of course. The meeting was secret as usual, and much of the elitists' world press attended, but no one reported on the events because they're forbidden to do so. This is why there is no media coverage of the Bilderberger meetings, nor of the Trilateral Commission. Some of the more notable attendees, Franco Barnaby, Vice Chairman, Rothschild, David Rockefeller, Henry Kissinger, Martin Feldstein, Timothy Gunther, the President of the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, Richard Haass, H-A-A-S-S, President, CFR, Richard Holbrooke, Vernon Jordan, Henry Kravis and his wife, Michael Leedon, or Lee Dean, L-E-D-E-E-N, Richard Pearl and Paul Wolfowitz. Now, Pearl and Wolfowitz are both in the, or were, in the Defense Department under, in the Bush administration. Take a look at bankruptcy here. Tower Automotive early this year filed for bankruptcy. The next victim is Collins and Aikman, followed closely by Visteon and Delphi. Now, Delphi is General Motors. An unwinding is now occurring in a broad array of so-called structured credit products. These are called derivatives. The possibility of contagion to other spread markets, namely high yield and emerging market debt, as well as investment grade corporates, cannot be ruled out. Such an event could cause havoc in our asset-dependent economy. Take a look at Leviticus 19, verse 35 and 36. You know, God warned us about unjust weights and balances. Use just weights and balances. He authorized gold and silver coin, wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil, property, not unjust weights and balances, such as Federal Reserve notes, stocks, bonds, and other derivatives. Derivatives. You want to tuck that one away. Last number I saw, $275 trillion worldwide out there in the form of derivatives. Talk about a house of cards. Let's take a look at commercial paper. We're told that over the past 5 years, that some $800 billion of CDOs, now that's commercial derivative orders or something like that. Well, that CDO there, it's commercial paper is what it is. Commercial paper like stocks and bonds. $800 billion worth of these CDOs have been issued, which is equivalent to 30% of new issuance of investment-grade corporates over the same period. Now, these forms of gambling probability and insurance, or whatever you want to call them, are simply out of control. Derivatives have consumed the market some $270 trillion worth. $270 trillion. And there's no end in sight. And if just one major writer has problems, like Bank of America or J.P. Morgan or somebody, just one, the whole edifice could collapse worldwide, like the Great Depression of the 1930s. The recent sell-off in credit products may be a warning shot over the bow of considerably more pressure to come in a much broader array of fixed income markets. These possibilities could easily be exacerbated by the Fed's extraordinary policy of post-bubble monetary accommodation and an increasingly desperate search for yield by investors in a low-return climate. The Federal Reserve has done nothing to discourage trading excesses, such as the carry trade. They have guaranteed profits for traders for 5 years. What has also happened is that what recovery we have had over these last few years has all been at the hands of the Federal Reserve. Increases in income have been minuscule, and savings are at an all-time low of 0.4%. That's virtually no savings at all. Thus, higher home prices have allowed the American consumer to monetize the proceeds of the carry trade to fund current consumption. Now, this has amounted to more than $710 billion over the past 4 years in the form of cash outs and second mortgages. People are now using the equity in their homes like savings accounts or checking accounts. This monetization of housing wealth was nearly 35% higher than the cumulative growth in earned wage income. This result is that debt loads are 90% of the gross domestic product. 90% of the GDP is debt. And in this environment, it's very difficult for the Federal Reserve to raise interest rates to proper levels, which should be around 6 or 7%. Now, that eventually means hyperinflation is coming. And the longer that the Federal Reserve waits to correct these excesses, the more disruptive the end results of the game plan will be. And the first victim of Fed policy will be the consumer, and they're in no position to survive the onslaught. We've probably got about 1 year to go. Now, we find that the Treasury International Capital Report is very disconcerting. That report reflects the ability of the United States to finance our budget, trade deficit, and therefore the current account deficit, all of which are out of control. These TIC figures, now remember TIC, the Treasury International Capital figures or capital report, these figures determine the future of the dollar no matter what the Federal Reserve does, and therefore the price of gold. Now, Chinese holdings of Treasury issued derivatives and bonds declined for the first time in a year, while Japanese holdings fell for the second time in the past 3 months. Now, if this continues, the dollar will reverse its rally, the recovery will end, and gold and silver will move higher. The Fed is again putting off the inevitable day of results until Alan Greenspan leaves his post in January. Now on to the housing bubble. The MBA reports, that's the Mortgage Bankers Association, the MBA, Mortgage Bankers, they report that adjustable rate mortgages accounted for 2/3 of loan originations in the second half of 2004. 2/3 of all new loans, 2,000, are adjustable rate mortgages. Now, let's suppose interest rates continue to rise as we believe they will, then adjustable house payments will rise when debt levels are already monstrous, and changing bankruptcy laws could and probably will cause foreclosures to rise. Now, the big corporations can bankrupt, and they can bail out of their billions of dollars worth of pensions. But now when Joe Sixpack and Sally Housewife go to bankrupt, beginning in October, they're going to find that, well, yeah, you can maybe bankrupt out of some of it, but you got to pay back some of it. So it isn't going to work the same for you, Joe and Sally, as it works for Enron and United Airlines and General Motors and Ford. Well, in California, 61% of mortgages taken out to buy homes in January and February were interest only. Now, that's up from 47% in 2004 and less than 2% in 2002. So it's gone from 2% to 61% of mortgages taken out today. From 2002 to 2005, in 36 months, it moved from 2% to 61% of interest-only mortgages. Now, boys and girls, an interest-only mortgage is like paying rent. I mean, there's no capital appreciation. There's no equity in a house that you're paying interest only on. Well, now only 18% of California households can afford to buy a medium-priced house using a conventional 30-year fixed-rate mortgage. So, we're down to about one person in five in California could go in and actually finance a house with a sane, rational, balanced prospect of making payments and interest over the next 30 years. Only one in five. All the rest are interest only or adjustable rate. They call them ARMs, A-R-M, adjustable rate mortgages. Now, I'm not opposed to real estate. I'm an old real estate man from way back. I'm a general contractor, and I was in the real estate business for many years, and I still am, and I don't mind buying, selling, and trading real estate and making profit and gain. But, you know, boys and girls, there's a big difference between going out and buying something. You know, the wife went out the other day and bought a house. But when she bought it, she paid for it. And one of these days, she's going to take some money and she's going to fix it up. And then she's going to turn around and sell it, and we hope she'll make a profit. But you know, if the market bubble collapses in the meantime, we still got the house. If you've got one of these adjustable rate mortgages, or you've got one of these leveraged interest only mortgages, and you just bought a condominium. I was watching the news the other day, and this couple up in Chicago is paying $310,000 for a condominium, and they're going to buy this thing over the next 5 years. This kid is a medical student. They're just going to make the payments. His wife is working. He's going to medical school. And they figure that over the next 5 years, paying the interest only, they'll be able to trade out of that condominium for something more than they paid for it and trade into a house they really want. Now, boys and girls, that's speculating that the housing bubble is going to continue for another 5 years. And those of us that are old farts and been sitting here on the sidelines watching this, you know, people say property goes up. That's BS. I've lived through three housing booms in my lifetime here in the United States, and Chapman mentions that here in the forecast, and we'll come to it in a future program. Three. The last one was in 1989. I mean, you boys and girls should be able to remember the last housing bust. There's a new housing bust coming. And I don't think this housing bubble is going to last five more years. That's my personal opinion, but then I didn't think the economy could last as long as it has either. So I was wrong. And I hope for these people that the world goes on and this condominium goes up from $300,000 to $600,000 over the next 5 years, because after all, my investments in my real estate is going to go up too. But there's one big difference. I don't own very much, boys and girls, but what I own is mine, and I don't have a mortgage on it. And these people, when this housing bubble breaks, and the value of that $300,000 condominium goes down to $250,000 or $200,000 or $150,000, that's called a deficiency judgment. And do you know that if you fail to make those payments, you've got to make up the difference? Hey, and did you notice that this new bankruptcy law that came out of the Congress says if you're a doctor you ain't bankrupt and out of that sucker. You're going to keep working as a doctor, and you're going to pay off that deficiency, so you're not going to have the house. You're not going to have the condominium. They're going to foreclose and take that away from you, and you're going to keep making those payments. Right up to the $300,000, Doc. I mean, after all, you got income. Yeah, maybe you're not going to make the payments as big and as better and big and as well as we thought you were, but you're going to pay for it. Now, I say that that's a double whammy. So you boys and girls out there that are speculating in these adjustable rate mortgages and interest-only mortgages, you know, I wish you the best. I mean, if you can leverage yourself, and I'm an old leverage man, I understand the leverage principle there. I've done a lot of it. And I took my risk and I took my lumps. And I went through that recession, you know, back in 79, 80, and 81 with the 21% interest rates. Now, you just picture 21% interest rates, boys and girls, on your $300,000 condominium that you're paying interest only on. And your interest rate is at 4.53% and it goes to 21%. I mean, you know, that's what it did in 79, 80, 81. And you're telling me that it can't happen again? Hey, I lived through this. I've lived through three of these housing booms. I'm an old general contractor. I know how to borrow money from the bank and build houses. I'm not sure that a lot of you people out there that are borrowing money, leveraging yourself into these houses, are as experienced or as knowledgeable as I am, and I don't claim to be a guru. I'm just telling you from my own personal experience, you're living in a housing bubble. And the thing's going to pop. And when it does, there's going to be some losses. And I lived through those losses and came back and made some gains. But, you know, if you could avoid those losses, and I teach a business school, and it would be well worth your time, effort, and energy to learn some of these business tricks that some of us old guys with gray hair have learned from the school of hard knocks. I remember when I was a kid, I was told, never put your money in the bank. But then I went to public school and they said, oh, those old jerks, they don't know what they're talking about. So I put my money in the banks and I put my money in insurance companies. I put my money into investments and lost them. I should have listened to the old timers that had lived through the Great Depression. I think they knew more about what they were talking about than these piled higher and deeper college professors that were telling us about FDIC and about how a modern economy works. You know, I lived through that 21% inflation in 79. I figured out how that works when I lost my ass. So if I can help some of you youngsters out there, I'd be more than happy to do it, but I'm not going to tell you what you don't want to hear. So if you don't want to hear it, don't ask. And when you ask, I'm going to tell you the answer. So don't come back and tell me I didn't want to hear it, because I'm going to say, if you didn't want to know, why'd you ask? And that's the way that game is played. Housing bubble. Listen to this. On a $350,000 fixed rate mortgage, interest only, you carry it for 4.8% or 5 years. The monthly payment's $1,400 for 5 years. After that, it jumps to $2,000. Got that? $1,400 goes to $2,000, $600 more. If interest rates do not rise, got that? If interest doesn't rise, it goes up $600. Now, what if? If they jump just 2%, the monthly payment increases 73% to $2,500. Now, we've been through four bull markets in housing, and what we see is beyond any prudence whatsoever. This is the ultimate, never mind the 52% of subpar loans that have been issued over the past 5 years. These are real-life problems for the future. In the second half of 2004, 17% of loans were interest only and 46% were adjustable rate, or 62% of the total. People are buying houses that they will not be able to afford if we have. See if I can turn the page here. A 2% raise in interest rates. Now, speculation is running rampant, and in the end, many people are going to get hurt. That's the way that game is played. Now, if you're one of those, well, then there's a logical, systematic methodology then there's a logical, systematic methodology for buying and selling real estate and making profit. Let me describe one. This is little Georgie speaking now. Let me describe one. Let's suppose, for the sake of our discussion here, that my wife goes out and there was a piece of ground over here, and she bought that for $32,000, and then she turned around and sold it for and paid for it. I mean, she bought it and owned it. Then she turned around and sold it for $90,000, you know, over time. She made a tidy profit off of the real estate because of the rising real estate market. I don't make these markets. I'm just pointing out that the market goes up. So if you've got real estate, now's the time to sell it. In fact, I got a young fella here. He was in New Jersey. And he sold his house on $120,000-$140,000 in New Jersey. Took his equity out of it. And he moved over here, and in the last I heard, he's in the process of buying a house here for about, you know, $60,000-$80,000. Now, the house he's talking about buying over here is a house and 7 acres. It's better than that. It's 2 houses and 7 acres. It's got an apartment with it. This guy's going to move from New Jersey to Ozark County. And he's going to move from an equity position in New Jersey on a lot in a city to 2 houses on acreage in the country, free and clear. Now, that's a hell of a move. I was looking at some numbers the other day, and I saw houses in San Francisco, California, $650,000. Same size house in Jacksonville, Florida, $150,000. You guys in San Francisco, sell for $650,000 and let some other guy hold the old maid. You move to Jacksonville, Florida, pocket $500,000 or pocket whatever equity you got, and buy the house in Jacksonville and own it free and clear. Then when the market collapses, you're sitting there pretty. It's free and clear. Now, every market analysis, every market analyst that I read all the conservative papers are telling you, you want to be free and clear, debt-free. When this implosion comes, boys and girls, you want to be free and clear, you want to be debt-free. And if you're not debt-free between now and October, you need to get debt-free. Because after October, you're going to be hung with that debt. Now, that's what we used to call feudal serfdom back in the Middle Ages. Feudal serfdom is coming back. A couple, three more quick stories here. I'll give you one more anyway on Iran. You can expect sanctions against Iran soon. More than 200 members of Congress, at the insistence of the American-Israel Affairs Committee and other Jewish groups, are building legislation for sanctions and penalties that will affect multinational companies and receipts of U.S. foreign aid. So, Plan Colombia cost U.S. taxpayers $3 billion, and this war on drugs is collapsing in chaos and corruption. I'll take it up right there next time. Drugs. The war on drugs collapsing in chaos. Remember the International Forecaster, published by Bob Chapman? You can subscribe. It's $129.95, $130 bill. That's P.O. Box 510-518, Punta Gorda, Florida, 33951-0518. The International Forecaster. Highly recommended. It's what we're reviewing this week. Well, there's more news when we come back next time. Let me give you a reminder. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and worldwide over the Internet. For more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events, and we do that 7 days a week. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date. Well, time's up. We got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, reviewing the International Forecaster. God willing, of course. Until then, good night, friends.